All right, we want to grab the microphone here. Give us a count to 10 in Danish.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
You could have made up like 10 different words there, and nobody would have had any idea.
It sounds impressive.
You could have insulted our entire families, and nobody would have.
These idiots.
I just would have nodded. Yeah, thanks, Nick. That's great. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast brought to you by GMC. Elliot, we are in Chicago for Sportsnet on behalf of our company for the NHL Media Tour. Now, we taped interviews with a lot of different hockey players. We're going to present three of them, and there's a little something juicy in each of these interviews. You'll hear from Nick Ehlers of the Winnipeg Jets. You'll hear from Ryan Nugent-Hopkins of the Edmonton Oilers. But we'll start with the always dapper, the always distinguished, the future Hall of Fame netminder, Henrik Lundqvist of the New York Rangers. Before we get your thoughts on him, share your thoughts on the Rangers offseason, whether it's Panarin, whether it's Kako, whether it's blue liners moving in, blue liners shuffling out. Your thoughts on what the Rangers did this offseason?
Look, there's two things that make the Rangers offseason an upper deck home run, and that is finishing second in the lottery, getting Kako, and also landing Panarin. And you can take a look at all the other things that happened there, but that is a huge, huge win for them. Look, it was a little over a year ago they did that. Letter to the fans, were tearing down. It was the right thing to do, but that doesn't mean it's not painful. Lundqvist talks about how hard it was in the interview with us. And, you know, the thing that you remember, too, is you have to take a look at the context of how they got Panarin. People thought maybe Florida was getting him. People thought the Islanders were going to get him, and the Rangers got him at a time when the basketball team struck out on Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and those guys went down the street to the Brooklyn Nets. People may hate the Rangers, but the NHL needs the Rangers to be great. The NHL needs the Rangers to matter, and they matter because of those two moves. Kako, too, like, that guy's going to be dynamic. Before the interview began, Jeff, you know, he was talking about Kako, yeah. And you asked him about Kako and what he's seen. He's pretty impressed.
The interesting thing about the Rangers, too, is we've talked about this before. You can sell wins or you can sell hope.
Yes.
And right now there's a lot of hope. And there's only a couple of guarantees on this Rangers team as I look at it. Lundqvist is one of them. The other is that top line, Zibanejad, Panarin, and Kaapo Kakko.
Mm-hmm.
After that, there's a whole bunch of question marks, specifically down the middle. Filip Hedl, Elias Andersson, Brett Howden, a lot of question marks there. How's this blue line going to measure up? Shattenkirk is gone. Mm-hmm. Trouba comes in, but they're going with a lot of youth on their bottom pair as well. I guess the question, because Vitali Kratsov will be part of the team as well, the question becomes, how close are they to finishing the rebuild? Because if I'm Henrik Lundqvist, I'm saying to myself, okay, when is this over?
Well, the thing is, if you really think about it, it just started, right? Even with Panarin, even with Kako, it's not over yet. Like, you don't turn over an NHL team in a year. Like, basically 16 months is what we're talking about here. What it is, it's accelerated. It's going to go faster now than they thought before because they have Panarin, and if Kako turns out to be what people think he's going to be. But you're right, there's still holes. I mean, to me, the most brutal division in the NHL this year is the Central. It's the toughest division. But I think in its own way, the Metropolitan will be just as competitive. I think there's Washington at the top, and I think there's seven teams. All of them have their strengths. All of them have their flaws, and they are going to claw at each other all year. And the Rangers are going to be right in the middle of that.
At the draft in Vancouver, that division got instantly better with the additions of Jack Hughes, New Jersey, and Kaapo Kakko to the Rangers.
Yeah.
Rangers a playoff team this year?
I think they're going to be fighting. Like, the thing is, like,
I think it's tough. I'm not ready to say that.
I look at this. Like I said, I think Washington's the class of this division. Pittsburgh, I think, is a playoff team. Carolina went to the Eastern Conference Final last year, but they're not getting the respect of a conference finalist. The Islanders went to the second round. I don't think they're getting the respect of a second round team. You think Philly's going to be better? Are you sure?
I suspect Philly will be better. I just don't know by how much.
Okay. And you're one of the guys who's convinced that Columbus is not going to be as bad as everyone thinks they're going to be.
I think Columbus is going to be okay. Really good players are still there. Questions about the goaltending. The team that I see falling off the face of the earth is the Islanders.
Do you know that if Lou Lamoriello is listening to this podcast,
I know.
He's finding out where you live right at this very second?
I'm sure he already knows. It's Lou Lamoriello. He knows all.
I see a bunch of teams there, and New Jersey will be better too. I think New Jersey is the biggest wild card in the division. How good is Corey Schneider? Like, he started to gain some momentum at the back end of last year. Can he get there? Like, Taylor Hall's playing for a contract. PK Subban, if you read his quotes to Chris Johnson, he's pissed off.
Yeah.
They're good down the middle. They got Hughes, they got Hischier, although Hughes might play a lot of wing. They got Zajac and they got Zaka. Like, that's a good center group. Like, I see a division there full of teams that could go anywhere from 2 to 8. Now, by the way, can I just say one thing about Lundqvist?
Yeah, let's get there.
Okay, so you and I and Amal, our producer, we fly in on Wednesday afternoon in Chicago.
Yep.
We land at 1:30 local time.
Yeah.
We go to the hotel. Amal goes out for dinner. Did you work out, Amal, on Wednesday? No. You don't work out. You're buff. Merrick.
He's naturally buff.
I know you worked out because you're a workout fiend. I went for a 2-hour walk before we went to the NHLPA availability with Donald Fehr. And we all had a decent night's sleep, right? So we come in, and this guy has been at the U.S. Open the night before. He's watching Andrescu. He takes an early flight in from New York to Chicago. He looks dynamite. The three of us compared to him.
Oh, how frumpy
like
did we look?
A bag of baked potatoes.
Like that looked awful.
Like Merrick, like I will confess that of the three of us, you probably looked the best. Please. And Amal, you looked the worst. But compared to him, we aren't even in the same universe.
I'm telling you, like I said, he walked in and I said to you, Elliot, I'm embarrassed to be a man. I'm embarrassed to be a man in the same room with Henrik Lundqvist.
Like
That's how great he looked.
In the morning and traveled New York to Chicago on a plane, and he was here 9 a.m. local time. Pfft, not a chance.
Showed up, looked great, was a total pro, pro. Hair's perfect, great smile, fantastic suit.
He comes to this a lot, and he always brings it, and he likes going to the All-Star game too. Like, they have a lot of trouble getting players to go to the All-Star game. Apparently, he really likes going. He wore that great suit last year with the lining. You know, he's not out there all the time, but when he's out there, he's like, I'm here for a reason, and I'm going to deliver.
That's the best way to live, too.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, if you have to drive your car, okay, just focus on I'm going to drive my car. I'm going to do 8 hours of media. Just focus on doing the 8 hours of media you're going to do. And that's Lundqvist. That's the sense I got. Okay, so here he is, New York Rangers netminder Henrik Lundqvist on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Welcome to Chicago local time, 1:18. PM, please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened and your baggage stowed until the seatbelt sign has been turned off. Smoking is not permitted. Mobile receiving and transmitting function may not be used, and if you have connecting flight today, please refer to the screen inside the terminal or consult with one of our colleagues on the ground. And on behalf of the entire crew, thank you for choosing Air Canada, member of Star Alliance, for Chicago today. We hope you had a pleasant flight. I look forward to seeing you soon. Have a good afternoon. Give me a
It's not difficult to feel like an inferior male when you're sitting across from this gentleman, Henrik Lundqvist, netminder for the New York Rangers. Elliot, I want you to get to your questions right away for Henrik. First of all, thanks so much for doing this and for joining us, Henrik. Do your questions first, because I think the first one about the cool factor may get the best answer the whole interview.
So here's the thing. Like, I asked teammates of yours, current and former, what's the coolest thing about Henrik Lundqvist? And there was number one is the suits.
What a question.
And number one is the suits.
Yeah.
Number two, some guy said the restaurant. But one player said that apparently you had a car once that had a certain metallic paint that blocked lasers so police couldn't say how fast you were going.
I don't know if I can answer that. I mean, I did repaint my cars a few times. I switched cars a few times. Yeah, but that paint job, no. There was no blocking. No blocking. I wish it was, but there's no truth to that one, I think.
I'm just curious, like, of all the things you do, aside from playing goal, what's the thing that excites you the most? Like, what is the thing that is your biggest passion after being a New York Ranger goalie?
Well, it's hard because I look at hockey and my role, and so much of me that goes into playing hockey that I can't really compare to anything. It's been my life. It's been my passion since I was 7 years old. But then there's definitely other things that interest me. I have hobbies, but to say I'm very passionate about something else, it's like you have hockey, the first 25 spots on that list, and then there's something else. But obviously, I know I'm not going to play forever, and I live in a city where you have an opportunity to do a lot of different things, meet a lot of interesting people, and but we'll see when I'm done playing, well, where I'm going to end up and what I'm going to do. But I love playing guitar, obviously. I'm not very good, but I enjoy it. I love meeting people in the restaurant business. You know, I have my restaurant in New York, but I can't say I spend a lot of time on all these different things. It's just a little piece of my life where, you know, that interests me. But hockey is still such a big part of my life that's where the focus really is.
We're here on a Thursday morning in Chicago. We were all watching the U.S. Open here on Wednesday night, and we saw you in the crowd. What I always wonder is, there's one player, and he says, you can never use my name. He's not Canadian. And he says, I can't cheer for Canada in anything because in hockey, they always beat my country. When you watch Canadian athletes like Andreescu, do you cheer for them or against them?
It all depends. If they're playing a Swede, obviously I'm not cheering for a Canadian. But no, but last night watching that match, she did a great job.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could see the power early on. But I wasn't convinced she was going to win in the first set. But then she just turned things around and the crowd got going. And it was impressive. I didn't know she was only 19, but amazing job, really.
Speaking of nationalities, what does your dressing room sound like? The Rangers room has players from all the major hockey nationalities. And it's not just, you know, there's one Finn, there's one Swede, there's one Czech player. No, there's a few from every country. What does your room sound like?
That's a good question. You know, I've been in New York now for 10 days. I've been skating almost every day, and we have now 5 or 6 Russian players. So a lot of Russian, but we obviously try to stick to English in the room. The cool thing is more the culture thing, that obviously we're coming from different backgrounds, but hockey really unites everyone in the room. And I think that's a great quality to have on a team when you have different perspective, and as long as you're open-minded and you can combine that together, you can learn a lot from each other. But I remember my first 3-4 years in the league, we had probably 7-8 Czech guys. Mm-hmm. Half the Czech national team played for the Rangers, and it was cool. You know, you come in and, you know, they were laughing a lot and telling great stories, mostly in Czech, but they had a lot of fun, mm-hmm. you know, and that kind of set the tone for that group because there were so many. And after that, it's been maybe a bigger spread.
Because there's so many dynamic young hockey players now with the New York Rangers. You mentioned you've been there for 10 days and you're seeing a lot of new faces, I would imagine. Who impresses you so far? Who does Henrik Lundqvist look at and say, oof, well, this kid?
They got the second pick overall this summer, Kako. He's looking good. He's a big kid. He's strong. He's got hands. I don't want to put too much pressure on him. It's early, but it looks like he's well prepared. I'm excited to see how we come together as a group here. We signed some really good players over the summer, and obviously Panarin is looking really smooth out there, as expected. But yeah, the next few weeks, it's going to be important for us to get on the same page for all the new players, young players, and then just talk about our goals. What's realistic for this year? What type of pressure can we put on this group?
I have to go, but I'm going to ask one more question if you could just answer it to Jeff. Henrik, I gained a ton of respect for you, even more than I had the last 2 years. I think it's easy to be a positive guy when things are going great, you know what the Rangers went through. You tore it down and did a rebuild, and you didn't drop your intensity level at all. You were determined to be positive through it. And I know it killed you inside because losing sucks. But I just got to say that I really thought that the way you handled yourself the last year and a half was impressive, because you held up for the organization when it wasn't easy for you. What was it like the last year and a bit?
Well, I'm going to be honest. Last year was probably my toughest year of my career. And I count my 4 or 5 years in Sweden as a pro, so almost 20 years, just to try to be mentally in the right place. What type of expectations can you have, and what type of pressure can you put on yourself? Because in the end, you want to win games. But the love and the respect I have for the organization is so big that I wanted to stay through this. I want to compete. I want to battle. I want to do what I can. And obviously the goal is to still be around when we start seeing the light in the tunnel here and start turning the page. And I think this summer was an important summer for the team, for the organization, and the signings we made and the draft picks. I mean, it's all looking good. I feel like we're coming back into a new season with some momentum here.
Did you think it would? Because I agree with you. I think most people agree. Like, this was a wonderful summer for the Rangers, and it looks like it's turning around fast. And you saw it, you know, at times last season when it clicked, and the emergence of Mika Zibanejad as a legit number one center, and in comes Panera now as his left winger, and Kaapo Kakko is going to be on the right. What a dynamic first line. Did you have a sense of when it would start to turn around? We can all remember, you know, the throwing in the towel and writing the letter to the ticket holders and all of that. And yeah, our first thought is, oof, what's Lundqvist going to think about this? And to Elliot's point, you stayed and you persevered and you endured. Did you have an idea that, you know, we can turn this around quick, or did you think this was going to be a long process?
Hard to say. I think my mindset was, let's just take it year by year, even week by week, but you don't want to look too far. All I knew is I want to stay in New York. I want to be a New York Ranger. Like I said earlier, I want to be here when things turn around and we're back on track. We had so many good years. We're a relevant team and we're in the mix every year. And that's where I want to be again with the Rangers. I think that's my biggest dream is still to win the cup with the Rangers. And I think we're on the right track here with this summer. And it's up to us now to prove that, you know, we're turning the page, we're improving as a group and as a team, and to get back that excitement, that's critical. And I think also, you know, New York is such a fun place to play when you feel that excitement, and it's up to us, the players, now to bring it back to the Garden, to the fans. So a big step this summer, but now it's, you know, we just continue to build what the organization started here a couple of years ago.
You know, Canadian sports fans fell in love with the Toronto Raptors run last year and fell in love with Kawhi Leonard. So Canadian sports fans became very personal with the term load management. And we've seen a lot of NHL teams, Dallas, Boston to some extent, the Islanders, platoon their goaltenders like we haven't seen for quite some time in the NHL. I know that you want to play every game, every minute of every game. But how many games do you think you should play versus how many games do you want to play? I know you want to play all the games.
Yeah, no,
but at this point in your career, is that something that you look at and say, you know what, this is a more comfortable number for me?
I think this conversation started already 4 or 5 years ago. And I thought maybe the game changed a little bit too. It's more intense now being a goalie in the league today. It's very intense. In the past, you could play 3 and 4 and feel pretty good. To play 3 and 4 4 days today, that's a lot. And I think last couple of years, you know, going into every season, we have this discussion, and I prefer not to talk about a number. It's more you go out, you play, and you feel it out, and don't get too stubborn that I need to reach this number. Or same for the coaches, let's reach this number. Let's just play and see how things work out. And sometimes you play a little bit more. You have a couple of weeks where you have a better schedule because you look at how the team is playing, how intense are the games. Sometimes you can play 3-4 games and you're not tired. And sometimes you play very intense games and you're extremely tired. So factors like that, you have to think about that before you set the number. But yeah, like you said, the number has dropped over the years. And looking at 55 games, maybe 60 games, but even less. The days when you played 70 games, I think, I think those are gone now. It's way more intense today than it used to be.
Last question for you. We thank you for your time today. Elliot talked off the top about, you know, the cool factor with Henrik Lundqvist and the cars and the restaurants and all that. At the end of your career, what do you want teammates to say about you? If you could control what they say, what would you want them to say about Henrik Lundqvist?
I mean, I take a lot of pride in how I compete. So hopefully they appreciate my compete level and the desire to win every night. And I love to compete in practice, and I do take a lot of pride in that as well.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And there he is, Elliot, the world's perfect male, Henrik Lundqvist, who doubles as a goaltender as well.
So he laughed about the question, but one of his former teammates told me that claimed that his car was painted with a color, some sort of metallic color that knocked the laser away.
Something tells me that's illegal.
It probably isn't even true, but it just fits with the mystique of the man.
Oh,
right?
That's totally on brand for Lundqvist.
Yes.
Like when you said that this morning, I didn't, you know, zoink scoop that one. That was like, oh yeah. I can see Lundqvist. He owns a high-end restaurant. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, he's got a fleet of expensive cars. Yeah, I can see that. Like, that point about that car is on brand for Lundqvist.
He also said he wasn't a very good guitarist, right? And that's not true. Like, he went on Fallon a couple years ago.
Thank you, the NHL, for ending your lockout. And thank you, New York Rangers goalie Henrik Lundqvist, for celebrating by coming on our show and playing Sweet Child of Mine on the guitar.
He's skilled. He's a really talented guy. One of my most favorite pieces I've ever done was, we were still at CBC at the time, and I went to New York, and the Rangers Media Relations Department, John Rosasco, they set it up so that we could walk with Lundqvist in Manhattan. And he talked about how he liked New York because it's so big that even though they love the Rangers, maybe only 2 out of 10 people would know who he was, so he could walk around. And we were walking down the street, and one guy yelled, "Go Rangers!" And he goes, "There's one of the two now." Like, you couldn't set that up, but it was just a really nice thing to do.
So we thank the Rangers and Henrik Lundqvist for making the goaltender available. Okay, from there, let's dovetail to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Mm-hmm. So Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was our first interview this morning, 9 a.m. local time. And the one thing, and you remarked on this early as soon as he walked in, just seems so relaxed. Like, we tend to think about Edmonton and the Oilers and their players as being these balls of tension ready to explode at any moment. This is a group that has been beaten down and embarrassed and insulted for a number of years. He could not have come in more relaxed this morning.
Well, the one thing is, Jeff, and this is going to sound a bit silly, but, you know, how long have you been doing this now?
Started in 95.
Okay, so you're 2 years after me. I started in 93, so it's 26 years. And you've been doing primarily hockey for how long now?
Since about 2003.
Yeah, okay, that's about the same time for me. I got hired by Hockey Night in October of 03. Like, you remember when you and I were, like, younger than the players and we were the youngest guys in scrums,
yeah,
right?
Not anymore.
But the other thing, too, is we are seeing players grow up before our eyes.
Yep.
And I thought about that when I saw Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in the morning. Like, I remember what he looked like when he was younger.
Remember him playing a Red Deer, how young he looked?
Yes. And even as an NHL player, in the first couple of years, he looked really young. He was thin. Now he's a man. Like, he's muscular. His body's filled out. And I think the one thing that Ken Holland, I think, does in Edmonton more than anything else is It's a guy who's seen everything. He's not fazed by a lot. And they've got this whole thing there with Connor McDavid now. Is he going to start the year? Is he going to play? And yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't start the year. But I don't get the sense that Ken Holland is that panicked about it. And when I see a guy like Nugent Hopkins, and he as the time that we did this interview, he hadn't met with Holland, although he had spoken to him. I just think that that's what Nugent Hopkins is kind of hoping for, is that this is a guy who's not going to panic, so we don't need to panic either.
There's a group of people, group of fans and followers of the NHL that really appreciate Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
And they're vocal about it on social media. But I always feel that that is the one player, and you can understand why, Connor's larger than life, Leon's become the same way, that always gets a short end of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you think the NHL universe is guilty of overlooking Ryan Nugent Hopkins?
I don't buy that.
Which is weird because he's a first overall pick.
I don't buy that because I think the right people are always watching. Like, I think the right people always recognize you. I believe that about my career. I believe that about most careers. If you are good at your job and you are competent, the right people always notice. I think it's easy to get eclipsed there behind McDavid, behind Dreisaitl, even in like an excitable up-and-coming player like Nurse. Mm-hmm. But I think that the people who really know hockey, they know what he does. And it's interesting. It sounds like when you listen to the interview when he talks about Todd McClellan,
yeah,
it's pretty clear that he thought that Todd McClellan believed he was an important part of that team. And it's important. Like, no matter what anyone else thinks, you've got to believe your coach believes in you. And it sounds like McClellan believed in him.
He does have interesting things to say about his history with coaches in the NHL as well. Here's the interview. Ryan Nugent Hopkins on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Dreisaitl, a little change of pace, helps him gain the line, but no problem. And he tried to chip it back to Klefbom, who threw it across. Connor McDavid, top of the left circle, unaccustomed to that spot, will give it up Nugent Hopkins. Left circle, wrist shot, score! Hat trick, Ryan Nugent Hopkins! 5-1 Edmonton!
What a wicked move by Ryan Nugent Hopkins. Good anticipation by him to stay in the play. Right there, picks it off on the attempted drop pass in the neutral zone, and he zips it far side. He loves that short, hard shot.
Off the boards, Cogliano. Reach for the puck by Nugent Hopkins. Great defensive play. Crowd screaming for a call against Nugent Hopkins, but it was clean. Now it's Dreisaitl to chase on. McDavid is open. Dishes. Shot. Nugent Hopkins scores. Ryan Nugent Hopkins power play game.
Elliot joined now by Ryan Nugent Hopkins of the Edmonton Oilers. Before we start talking about hockey, Ryan, congratulations are in order. You're a new husband.
Thank you. Yeah, got married this summer, mid-July, so it's been great.
Where?
We got married in Hawaii on Maui, so it was beautiful. Everything went well, and yeah, it was exciting.
In every interview, you ask questions that you hope will get answered, but you know probably won't. Which teammate was the drunkest at the wedding?
Ooh.
Who wore the lampshade?
Yeah.
The one-man conga line. Who was it?
There's a couple guys that kind of stick out here, but I'm not gonna throw out names. Just
what do they rhyme with?
I'm not gonna throw anybody on the bus right now.
Do it.
I had a couple friends who really led the way. So, I mean, yeah, buddy Brett Ferguson. He was on the dance floor. He was sweating from his knees. So that's kind of give you a sense of what was going on the dance floor.
That's a good wedding. Yeah. When people are having a good time, that's a good wedding.
They tell me I had a good time. To hockey, I know last season didn't go the way that you wanted. That's clear. But from a personal point of view, how much do you look at last season just from yourself? I mean, statistically, your best season. Do you feel like that sort of got overlooked in what happened with the team and the individual performances of Leon and Connor? You had a heck of a season last year, Ryan.
Thank you. Personally, I don't think it's a sense of being overlooked just because, I mean, I don't think that we should put too much importance on a good individual season if we don't play well as a team, if we don't have success. So that's kind of what I base my season on. Obviously, I'm out there trying to produce, trying to help out the team. And personally, my last two seasons have been my best as far as point production. But and I've kind of found my two-way game a little bit better the past two seasons, and that's something that Todd McClellan kind of helped me with, was kind of finding that balance. And okay, you want to be responsible defensively, but we need you to help produce offensively. You're one of the guys that we rely on for that. So it kind of, he really helped me find my game offensively again. And like I said, it's I want to continue to produce and be that two-way guy to be relied upon. But I mean, it doesn't really mean a thing if we're not having success. And obviously, that's the whole goal for everybody out there.
Did you have a face-to-face with Ken Holland at all this summer?
I haven't yet, but I did talk to him on the phone, and he's obviously an experienced guy. He knows what he's doing. I think he's going to be great for our team, for our organization. Just he's going to be that the steady guy. He's not going to be pressured into making any rash decisions anytime soon. I mean, he's one of those guys where he knows what he's doing. He's confident in what he can do, and that's a huge thing for us.
It hasn't been easy to be an Oiler the last few years. And I'm just curious, as a player who's seen everything there, is there anything that you would ever say to him, I just want to see this as part of our growth?
Yeah. I think for me personally is consistency. And I think that's something that's been, has kind of been lacking when we have tough years. I mean, obviously when you're not having success, you want to change things up. But I think at the same time, it's important to keep guys together, to keep, well, I mean, I've had 8, 9 coaches, head coaches, and this is going into my 9th year. I mean, it kind of starts from the top down where we want consistency from everywhere. And then, I mean, I think that can help us play more consistent, play our game consistently. But I think consistency has just been it's a huge thing in my head where I want to play with the same guy. I want to build some chemistry, whether it's one guy, whether it's two guys. I think that's something that's, I haven't really been able to do over the past few years, is find a line mate, even one line mate that I can just stick with, I can build chemistry with. And I think, and like I was saying, I mean, he's a steadfast guy. I think that's kind of what he'll bring, is some steadiness.
Boy, that's a great answer.
And I want to pick up on that too. That's a great answer. I'm curious, in your mind, like, what type of winger complements your game the most?
That's a good question. I still see myself as a playmaker first. So a guy who can find himself in the right spot. And I think that's always been important to me, is I'll go get it if I need to. I'll go try to make a move to create some space, but I want to be able to move the puck to a guy who's ready in the right position. And I think for me personally, I also like when we're all connected. So 3 forwards, I always want to be kind of moving. I always want to be connected. I want to make little plays. And then I feel like that opens things up. You start to lose guys. And as soon as you find somebody open, you got to find them in the right spot. So I think a fast goal scoring winger is something that I've always kind of enjoyed playing with.
I would assume that at certain points this year, you'll probably play with James Neal, who comes in. You had real nice numbers with Drew Jarkera.
Yeah.
When you get, which is interesting for those that may not follow the Oilers, who do you feel you really clicked with? I mean, it's easy to say Connor because...
Yeah, Connor. For
Connor.
Sure.
But, I mean, who do you feel you've really clicked with on that team?
Well, I think you said it. I mean, I did play... I had some time with Juge last year, and actually Jesse. You guys know what's going on with Jesse, so I don't know if what the story this year with him is going to be, but me, Jujar, and Jesse, we had about 10 games... probably the second half of the season together. And I think we actually did score or do something good every game. So
yeah,
we did have chemistry, and that was kind of the thing. I mean, me and Juge, we'd go get the puck. He's a big body. He's going to create space and time. But he's smart. I mean, he's a very smart player. He's played center a lot, so he knows what it's like. And we'd always be supporting each other. And then things would open up. And I mean, Jesse, he's a goal scorer, really. I mean, you get him the puck in the right situation, he's going to put it in. And we just connected. We felt comfortable together. And unfortunately, we didn't stay together as long as I had hoped.
With Puljujärvi, would you ever text him, say, anything I can do to make this better? Do you insert yourself into that at all?
I haven't lately. Maybe I should. I talked to him at last season. There's obvious frustration. But I mean, as a young player, I've been with the Oilers. There's going to be frustration. Pretty much any team you play for. I mean, it's not always you're going to play the top line minutes at all times. I know Jesse. He's been a little frustrated. Thinks he can. And you know what? I'm not going to say whose fault it is. Whether he's right, whether he's wrong. I know what Jesse is capable of. He's a very, very talented player. He's a big kid. I mean, he's got everything you need. I think he can get down on himself a little bit too much. Confidence is a huge thing in the game, and sometimes I've seen it. His confidence kind of goes away if he's not playing his game or the best game that he feels he can play. But I know what he's capable of, and it's too bad to see it going down this path, because I think he'd be a great guy for us and a guy that we could use a lot.
Do you ever say to Connor or Leon, can I have an offensive zone draw once in a while?
Yeah. Or just put me out there with you guys. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously those guys are going to get the majority of them. But I think, you know what? It's all situational too. If those guys are fresh, I mean, why not put them out there? I mean, they're going to control the puck down there. But yeah, I should next time I'm just going to hop on the ice. We got this, Connor.
You mentioned off the top of the interview about becoming more of a 200-foot player. Elliot talks about the defensive zone faceoffs. I mean, you really have become that player now. And I love the Andrew Cogliano story and what he turned himself into from being a high scorer playing with St. Mike's and Junior, like, to where he is now in the NHL. When did it really start to come together for you? Because, I mean, I remember watching you play a ton in junior, and it was lights out, 2 points, 3 points, like breaking sticks. When did that light go on for you at the NHL level, though?
Pretty quick as I got into the league, I realized how important the defensive side was going to be for me. I realized that it's not as easy as the WHL, again, putting up points every night. So I need to find my two-way game, and if I want to be relied upon, like I do want to be relied upon, I need to get that down. But I do also feel like it maybe hurt my production a little bit, where I was a little bit too focused on the defensive side and we were struggling to score goals, and I was just kind of mostly focused on playing well defensively. I didn't want to take any risks. I didn't want to jump out of position. But I think the past 2 seasons, I'd say I'd found my my two-way game better than I have leading up to that. So it's something that I still know I can get better at. Faceoffs is something that I still want to be way better at. I want to be around 50, or I want to be over 50. Obviously, you want to be over 50, but something that I need to keep working on, and it's a big part of the game, so I know that now, and going to keep working on that.
Well, our next guest is here, so we got to wrap up. But, you know, Ryan, I don't want to sound like your grandfather or anything like that. But
he does it to me all the time.
We've seen you come into the league and now grow. And just listening to you in this interview, like, you've always been a quiet guy, but you've got that real quiet confidence now. Like, you're really growing into yourself in this league. Like, keep it up. Like, I mean, this interview, like, you haven't been shy. You've been confident. Like, it's really, it's great to watch, Ryan. Continued success.
Here's where you're supposed to say thanks, Dad.
Yeah, thanks, Grandpa.
Just thanks, kidding. Ryan.
Thanks a lot, Ryan.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Elliot, not sure about you, but I think we're probably singing from the same hymn book on this one. I took away one word from this: consistency. That's what he and probably the entire team craves right now.
I think so. I mean, don't you want that in your job, to know what your expectations are and to have some sort of normalcy around you? You know, I admit, when I asked that question, I wasn't expecting the answer to be that good. You expect that, you know, most players will say something that is simpler or doesn't rock the boat. I thought it was a really intelligent, smart answer. And I wonder if Nugent Hopkins would have said it, the more I thought about it later, if he didn't believe it was going to happen.
When you look at the way Ken Holland has behaved in the offseason, I mean, certainly there's a Lucic-Neal trade, but it isn't as if Ken Holland has come in guns a-blazing.
I think he told them that. I think he said this is not a quick process. Like, one of the things I really believe is that, look, like, the Oilers and their fans, they've been through a lot. Their players have been through a lot. Like, you heard Nugent Hopkins talk about it. They've been shell-shocked at times by what's happened to them. I get the sense that Ken Holland looks at it like, if we get another lottery pick this year, it's not the worst thing for us. Because you can't extricate yourself from all these contracts that they did one with, they traded the Neil Lucic deal. but you can't extricate yourself from what they were in very easily. It's going to take time. Plus, also, you've got a franchise player here that may not be ready for the start of the season, and they've made it very clear they're not going to rush him back, which is the smart play. So what if Ken Holland is saying, I can't get myself out of everything I want to get myself out of yet, so I'll take another first-round pick and continue to sort it out as we go along. I think that's tough for their fans to hear. I think it's tough for their players to hear. But what if a non-panic move and some consistency, at least in the roster, is the right thing to do?
Long-term, it's probably the right thing to do. But
it's easy for us to say three provinces over.
Yeah, tickets are expensive last time I checked.
Yep.
Like this is, and there's a lot riding on this hockey team and the success of this team.
Yep.
Where are you at on Puljujärvi?
Well, we're doing this on Thursday. The podcast is being released on Monday. You always worry that, you know, something's going to happen. I thought it was really gracious of Nugent Hopkins to talk well of him. I think he's getting traded. I don't think he'll come back. I don't think he wants to come back. You know, I've reported that I think they were talking pretty heavily with Carolina and Tampa Bay. I think I'd mentioned that the Carolina prospect I heard was Gauthier. And I think the Tampa one I heard was Volkov, but they want a prospect and a pick. It's poker time. And Ken Holland's made it very clear he'll do it on his time. But Puljujärvi is doing the right thing. Get out there early in Finland, look good.
Be successful.
Be successful. That's what the player has to do. The player's end of the bargain is go out there and look great. And at least he started well.
All right, from one Canadian team to another, from Edmonton to Winnipeg, Nick Ehlers. A fascinating player, interesting personality as well, and a couple of eyebrow-raising moments, to say the least, in this interview. But you were struck right away, as many of us were when he walked in the room, the new coif of hair.
Yes.
Looking good. Traditional Canadian hockey hair.
Yes, he's got, it's not really a mullet per se.
No.
But it is feathery in the back.
Now, you reference this towards the end of the interview. The answer was fascinating. But his name is out there and has been out there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
How close has Winnipeg been?
I don't know if it's been that close. They definitely talked with Carolina. You know, I had someone tell me they thought it was close. I had other people tell me it wasn't that close. But obviously it was out there. You know, Winnipeg's got a lot of moving pieces. I think the interesting thing we learned this past week is that we're all talking about Connor and Laine. Well, it sounds like they're trying to get Josh Morrissey extended too.
Mm-hmm.
And his bridge deal ends this year, which is a smart move on their part. He's a very important player for them. I think the lesson with the Jets is they've got a lot of moving parts. I don't want to give this one away. I was pleasantly surprised by this interview. Not that I thought it was going to be bad. I just didn't know what to expect, and I thought he was really good.
Ehlers delivered. Here he is on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
And a drive by Ehlers into the top corner. He makes it look easy, and it's 3-1 Winnipeg.
First NHL goal for that.
Wow, the young man from Denmark, the first-round draft pick of the Winnipeg Jets last year, 2014. What a shot.
It is Ehlers with the hat trick. Nikolaj Ehlers, his second career hat trick, and his first since he got one against Arizona. And there is one hat on the ice.
Elliot, our next guest, Nick Ehlers of the Winnipeg Jets, gave me one of my enduring visuals from Halifax hockey. Some of my greatest junior hockey moments at the Metro Center, watching the Mooseheads play. And one of the things I always enjoyed is when Nick Ehlers played on the team and he would grab the puck behind the net and the whole place, Nick, would start chanting, Nick, 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 Nick. It was the coolest vibe in that arena. Before we get to the Winnipeg Jets questions, it was such a cool vibe when you played with the Mooseheads. What are some of your memories playing with that legendary junior team?
The memories are still there and I miss it. You know, even playing in the NHL now, I certainly miss Halifax. I miss playing there. I love playing in Winnipeg, no doubt. But junior hockey is just different. You play, you have fun, and everyone's on the same level. You know, everyone goes to school. We're still kids, and it's still kind of all about fun still. So you're just playing hockey. And Halifax was amazing. They were very professional, which helped me a lot coming in from Switzerland. So
those 2 years in Halifax were pretty incredible.
Those fans loved you. Like Halifax hockey fan, they loved their McKinnons and Nico Hischier and
I wish, by the way,
they loved Ehlers.
I wish we had a camera right here, right now, because as Jeff is saying that, Nick is nodding his head with a smile.
Yes, they did.
He's got the good memories going.
They loved you there.
Well, I don't want to sit here and say yes.
They did.
But it was so much fun playing there. I mean, they loved their hockey. They loved the Mooseheads. You know, my first year, we had around 9,000 fans for our games. And playoffs, it was crazy. I still think back to those playoffs and just, you know, I shake my head because we should have made it much further than that. We deserved more. We had the team to do it. And if I remember correctly, we lost that game 2-1 and outshot Val-d'Or 46-15 or something like that. Bibeau was unreal in net, but I'm just saying that our team was...
We all thought you guys were going to London. World Cup. We all thought you were going to London.
And I'm not saying that we all thought, yeah, we're doing this easy, but we knew we had the team to do it. And it was such an exciting year because of that. You know, for me, coming in as a new guy, I had no idea what to expect. But as soon as you hit that 20 mark and you're first or second in the league, you're like, and you see what team you have, it gets exciting. So hitting the playoffs with the fans, the team that we had was pretty incredible.
You know, in tribute to how much fun Nick had playing junior hockey, he has let his hair grow. And he said it is...
the junior hockey flow back.
We don't... Obviously, this podcast does not come with photos. But when you see him this year in Winnipeg, and I saw the curls at the back of his head, he goes, this is the first time I've had those since I played junior. So, obviously, the memories are good everywhere.
You're keeping the feathers for the season?
We'll see how long it's going to stay like this, but... I'm going to let it grow for a little.
So when you walk into Winnipeg, have you been in Winnipeg yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, so when you go to Winnipeg, who is going to look at you and say, what the heck is going on with your hair?
Well, it'd probably be Patty Laine, but he probably won't be there. So,
yes.
I have no idea. I've seen Wheels, Blake Wheeler. He's been letting it grow a little as well. I think we got something going on with our team this year, you know. We'll see.
It looks good. Don't be intimidated. Keep it as long as you want to do it. You know, I don't want to get, obviously, more into it than you want to. But here's the question, because we kind of talked to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins about it with Jesse Puljujärvi. Do you contact Patrick? Do you contact Kyle? Do you keep in touch with them? Do you ever ask them about it? What's the protocol like between players?
Everyone knows me and Patty have a good relationship. You know, you have one with every other guy on the team, but me and Patty were roommates for 2 full years and we're really good friends. I've talked to both Patty and Kyle this summer, but nothing about that. You know, it's been like, hey, how's it going? Enjoying summer. Me and Kyle were actually talking about the flow because I was letting it grow, right? And he was like, oh, yeah, looks good and stuff like that. And with Patty, you know, it's been like, hey, are you coming or what? And he's like, I don't know. You know Patty. He doesn't talk a lot. So that's been kind of it. But that's between them. You know, if there was anything I could do to make them both stay in Winnipeg, I would. Anyone in Winnipeg would do it, right? But it's up to them what happens now. It's up to the team, of course, as well. There's... stuff that needs to happen, and hopefully we both see them in Winnipeg very soon.
The one thing I think a lot of people admire about the Winnipeg Jets, I know I certainly do, is it's a team that can play a lot of different ways. And I've always felt that's one of the benchmarks of really great hockey teams. You can play a up-tempo, speedy game. You have guys that can do that. You're one of them. You can play a physical game. You guys are very comfortable playing a physical game.
Am I one of those guys too?
I wouldn't put you, but there are some other, you know, mentioned Blake Wheeler a second ago. There's a Dustin Buff. Like, you have players that can do that. You can play an 8-7 game. You can play a 2-1 game. I do wonder, what's it like being on a team where there's not just one identity? There's not one way the Winnipeg Jets play hockey or can play hockey.
It makes it so much more fun. You know, I've always played not just my own way in junior. I've obviously played the style that the coach wanted me to play. But I've always had that kind of freedom to also play my own by, for example, taking the puck behind the net and just trying to skate through. And by the way we play in Winnipeg, by not just having that one style of play and always doing the same thing, you kind of get a little bit of freedom. And, you know, what's good with our coach, our coaches, but especially, you know, Paul, is he wants us to not be afraid to do those things that we're good at. You know, like for me, especially like taking the puck and skating and just, you know, maybe not beating the guys on the offensive blue line every time because it goes the other way too, but letting us play with a system, but letting us play. It's a little hard to explain, but he does that, and that's why I think that we've been successful. We got the players to do that.
I remember years ago talking to your coach, Paul Maurice, and I said, what was your welcome to the NHL moment as a coach? Like, what was the moment where you were on the ice, something, or you were coaching, something happened, and it made you understand that you're in the NHL? And he said it was his first practice as head coach. So he called the guys to center ice, gave some type of instruction, blew the whistle for a hard lap, and he said Sammy Kapanen took off and skated faster than he'd ever seen anyone skate in his life. And that's the moment where he said, whoa, this is the NHL. What does Paul talk to you about your skating and your speed?
You know, that's obviously my biggest strength. And for the first couple of years, I felt like I had a problem with when to use it and when to not take it easy, but when to use my speed and how to use it as much as possible. And I think it's gotten a lot better. And Paul, of course, wants me to use that as much as I can. Not just when I get the puck and skate down the side with it, but also, you know, in forechecks and, you know, back checking and all that. So, you know, I want to use it as much as I can in the right moments and use it smart. So that's something I'll be working to do for the rest of my career, I think.
Nick, what was this offseason like? You know, you guys go to the Western Conference Final last year. This year you run into the eventual Stanley Cup champions in the first round. You know, Tyler goes, Jacob gets traded, all the other business that's going on. I'm sure you heard like some rumors about yourself here and there. You know, how did you handle all that, especially with, you know, hearing your name out there?
Hearing my name didn't touch me at all, to be honest.
It's interesting because some guys go really crazy with that.
You know, I saw it and, you know, everyone around me in Denmark was like, hey, man, like, where are you going? Like, what's happening? And I was like, I have no idea. Like, I have no idea what's going on. I haven't heard or seen or anything from anyone. So I know as much as anyone else. And that's what I told him. They're like, what? How? Like, how do you not know more than I do? And I'm like, I don't know. So it's kind of funny. Like, I'm walking around in Denmark and I don't think about it. The only time I think about or thought about that was when people came and asked me about it. And I gave them the same answer every time. I have no idea. But, you know, with all the other stuff going on with our team this year, that also doesn't, you know, they're great guys. We've lost some great guys. We lost some great guys and players. So it's guys that you spend so much time with. They're like brothers to you. So it kind of hurts. But like you said yourself, it's also business. It is. That's just how hockey it is. You're going to lose some players that you've played with for a couple of years, but then you're going to get new ones. And you know, you try to create a bond with them and create something special on the ice with them. So it's positive and it sucks sometimes to be in this business with during the summer, especially.
One more for you. Your division is the toughest in the league, in my opinion. You've got the defending Stanley Cup champion. Dallas looks really good. Colorado looks really good. Somebody said to me, he thinks Winnipeg and Nashville are being a bit disrespected, that people are kind of forgetting what they've done the past couple of years, and they're saying there's new teams at the top. Do you feel people are kind of disrespecting the Winnipeg Jets?
I don't care. I really don't care. I don't care if we're if they talk a lot about us or not too much or not a lot. We know what we've done. We know what we can do, so they can talk about everyone else as much as they can. We'll stay in the back and do our thing. We're good with that.
It's a fun team to watch.
That's awesome.
Nick, great answer. Great answers and great feathers as well. Thanks so much for doing this. Have a great season.
Thank you very much, guys.
Elliot, I don't care. Great answer.
That was awesome. I expected the boilerplate people who don't respect us, they're going to learn that they're making a huge mistake. Boy, he gave it right to them. You know, like I said, I don't really know Ehlers that well. I've talked to him a little bit, but not at length. I really enjoyed a lot of the different things about this conversation. The stuff about his name being out there, the I don't care at the end, but the stuff too, talking about Halifax with you and Line A and just everything that's going on there.
I was surprised that he copped to, well, he's probably not going to be here.
Well, I think the guys aren't stupid, right?
And but when do they ever say that?
Well, I think one thing we learned in the interview is this guy's not afraid.
No.
Like, Ehlers is not afraid. I really enjoyed the conversation with him. And I'll tell you this, if all the Winnipeg players have that kind of swagger, that's going to be really good for them. Because I do think that Winnipeg and Nashville are kind of being disrespected.
Winnipeg does have players like that. Blake Wheeler is like that.
Scheifele.
Dustin Bufflin can be like that. Scheifele, you Hellebuck. Mentioned, can be like that. Hellebuck. They have a lot of players.
Yeah.
That skate a little bit nasty with burrs under their saddles. That's Winnipeg.
You know, Ehlers, you know, the one thing about him is he's never scored at the rate in the playoffs like he has in the regular season. He'll have to get there. But, you know, I like that confidence. I think that your mindset is, and I know you're big into studying the mind and maximum human performance. If you don't have the right mindset, you don't have a chance.
It's true. Where are you at on Winnipeg? In a very tough Central.
I think you have to look at right now, like I think five teams from the Central are going to make the playoffs.
I agree. And that's both a comment on the Central and Pacific.
Yes. And I just think they're too good. I'm not going to disrespect the Stanley Cup champions, but I think Colorado is really good. My only question is the goaltending.
Colorado might win the division, bud.
Well, I think Dallas is going to be really good. I think Colorado is really good. I think Dallas is really good. And Nashville and Winnipeg, it's not like those guys are, you know, weak sisters or anything like that. I mean, that division every night, like we talked before at the beginning of the podcast, at the Metro, those teams are going to claw at each other. But they all have flaws. Like there's five legitimate, like Stanley Cup contenders in the Central. Like that division this year is going to beat the crap out of each other.
Where does Minnesota figure into that Central discussion?
I think, you know, you're not feeling very confident. I think the real wild card there is going to be Chicago. Like, how good are they? Minnesota, I think, has got a real battle.
Mm-hmm.
Real
Chicago,
battle.
Chicago will be the wild card. And we'll see if Dylan Strome can produce at the same rate. We'll see. I mean, strongly suspect that Alex DeBrincat is going to keep shooting the way that he shoots because that's what he does. And you're going to, you know what's fascinating about Chicago to me is you have two goaltenders that are going to slug it out for another contract in Robin Leonard and Corey Crawford.
I got to tell you, there are people out there convinced the Leonard one is already done.
That Leonard's going to be the goaltender and that deal's done, sitting on a drawer
there, somewhere? I mean, I don't know if it's true, but there are people who are convinced. They say that is the first step in Robin Leonard being in Chicago a long time. I have to say, by the way, I don't know if there's anything the NHL does better than this.
They do the draft really well.
They do.
I think they do a really good job of the draft. But
the car wash,
this event,
it's really good.
The way it's organized, the way it's done. And there's some headline players that have shown up too. Yeah. And you know, the one thing, you've talked about this before on the podcast and elsewhere, is getting the headline players out to these events to do it and get them all in the same spot. And that, you've talked about this. The headline guys are warming to it more so than ever.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it this year. Takeaway from day one, media tour.
Can't wait for day two.
Day two on the horizon. We'll turn that one into a podcast as well. Thanks for joining us. I guess this is the maiden voyage for season 3 of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. We are now back and we'll take you out with Billy Wilde, The Waves on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Talk to you soon. Let me be the